I'm a level 100 podcaster.
I'm a level 20 microphone. Butterscotch shenanigans. Hey everybody, welcome to Coffee with Butterscotch. This is the official podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. We are a three brother video game studio, and I'm Seth.
I'm Adam.
And Sam is currently not here, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. And if you want to play our games, you can find them at games.bscotch.net. You can also join our loving community at forums.bscotch.net. And we also have a little disclaimer, which is, like booze and guns and voting, this podcast is not for children. So if you're a child, go away. All right, let's get started.
Let's do it.
So Sam is the third brother. He's currently not here. He's still in the hospital, and he'll be there for another 3 weeks or so. He's in the midst of a stem cell transplant. Or rather, he's currently preparing for it. The transplant will take place on Friday, so 2 days.
Yeah, it's coming up really soon. Last week, as we mentioned on last week's podcast, he was receiving rabbit's blood in preparation for this thing and getting irradiated with x-rays.
Yeah, so he's basically consumed all the rabbit blood that exists.
I'm pretty sure that at some point, the combination of those two things must give you superpowers.
Yeah, I mean, that's how just about every comic book hero
starts. Yeah, I mean, it's radiation and then combination of your biology with the biology of another being.
Yeah, although I feel like maybe he got a little bit shafted because he didn't get the horse blood.
Yeah, but I mean, rabbits have some.
They have some good traits, but he's going to come out a lot smaller.
Yeah.
You know?
So, and his ears are going to be enormous, although that would probably be a consequence of horse blood as well.
Yeah, you can't get around the ears thing. That's just it's sort of like how Spider-Man doesn't have ears, you know, because of the spider thing.
What does a horse have on a rabbit besides size?
Well, that's it.
Because I mean, rabbits are fast. Rabbits can jump really high relative to their size.
A person can't ride on a rabbit. So if Sam wanted to give rides to people. He's going to be out of luck.
That's true.
But he's doing well. He's feeling pretty good, and he's a little tired, but he's basically got one more week of feeling pretty good before he's going to start feeling real bad. So he's taking this week to jam out as much art as he possibly can for Crashlands before he gets slammed by the transplant genie. So that's what he's doing.
The transplant genie does not grant wishes like other genies.
No, he's a dick.
Yeah, he just grants
real dick
pain and confusion and fatigue,
and a new immune system.
In the end, yes. In the end, he does grant you the.
That's the one wish he grants. Is if you wish for that, that's what you're going to get. It's kind of like Henry Ford's thing about, you know, you can get a car in any color you want so long as it's black.
Right.
So the transplant genie will give you anything you wish for as long as what you wish for is a new immune system and being real fucking sick for a couple weeks.
I mean, yeah, because along with any good wish system, there are also all of the caveats because you have to beware what you wish for.
Yeah, and I'll be heading over to the hospital to work with Sam later today.
All day yesterday, I believe.
Was there yesterday. I had a bit of a late start today because I was on TV this morning.
Oh my God!
Which was weird because...
how did that go? I haven't heard anything about this yet.
It was crazy. I've never been in a,
well,
in
first,
a TV studio.
Why were you on TV?
There's an event here in St. Louis called Pixel Pop Festival, and this is the second year that it is happening. And as some of the more active members of the game dev community here, we are speaking at Pixel Pop and we're trying to help promote it, you know, as in what little way we can. And so there's a little segment on the news about Pixel Pop Festival. So I appeared on there with Carol Mertz, who's works at Happy Badger Studio, also here in St. Louis. And she's one of the co-organizers of Pixel Pop.
And they're working on a really cool game that's going to be coming out for PlayStation.
Smugglecraft.
Called Smugglecraft.
Yeah. And their development is going a little bit slower than they'd like because they have to also do some client work and stuff on the side. So they don't get to work on it as fully as they want to, but they're hoping to get Smugglecraft out sometime next year. So check that out.
Yeah, that'll probably be demoed along with a bunch of other games by local St. Louis game devs at Pixel Pop. So if you're into, you know, participating in community stuff, 30 games?
30 games are going to be demoed at Pixel Pop. Oh, wow. I think somebody's flying in from friggin' Paris. France, not Paris.
What?
There's probably a town called Paris in the U.S. somewhere, but no, it's France.
That's cool.
It's gonna be a big thing, and Adam and I will be speaking. We'll be giving a talk about how to start a game studio and just kind of some of our philosophies and.
Yeah, and we've done it once, so obviously we know what we're doing.
Yeah, we've started a game. Actually, I started two game studios.
That's true, actually.
And my first one still exists. So it's
called Stas Studios. I'm pretty sure the blog is still up.
It's still up. I think it hasn't been posted on in five years. So things are going real well for Stas Studios. And so this TV station, I don't really watch TV. I have to preface this conversation with that.
Because you'll watch TV shows on Netflix.
Yeah, but I don't watch the news.
Yeah, you don't
which
watch
is what this right. was. And the reason I don't watch the news is because
it's all commercials.
It's about half commercials and then
bad,
what
terrible
they do
news.
Show is they kind of did just rapidly alternate between super depressing things and weirdly specific local things or uplifting things or whatever. So our segment was between they had a guy for some cult. There was like a big cultural event. They had a guy like drumming in the parking lot outside, and they were talking about some various things about that. And then we came on to talk about Pixel Pop, and so we had 3 minutes to talk about that. And also, I played Roid Rage on the news.
So you played it on air. How did they set that up exactly?
They had an iPad talking to a TV using, what is it called, like Apple TV or something?
I have no idea.
And then they had a giant screen that I was standing in front of playing Roid Rage. Which was kind of awesome.
Did it end up showing ads too while you were playing?
No, it was only, I mean, it's a 3 minute segment and the ads are on a short cooldown. You know, they're on a 2 minute cooldown or whatever. So I played it for about a minute, but, and then after that, they were talking about a child that was murdered. So,
that was
a real great kind of a, roller coaster of emotion for everyone.
Did they get to show Smugglecraft or anything for? As well, or was it?
No, I mean, so Carol was there to talk about Pixel Pop, and so was I, but the organizers were like, oh, it's a game, there's games, we need to put games on here. So they were real into Roid Rage, and they wanted me to keep talking about it. I kept trying to redirect the discussion back to Pixel Pop, because, I mean, we just made Roid Rage as a little small thing, and I don't need to go on TV to promote Roid Rage.
No.
So that didn't really go the direction that I was hoping it would.
Well, I think it's probably just because TV is I mean, obviously a very it's purely a visual medium, and it's hard to get people excited about the concept of a convention that's coming up with just a handful of or with a couple people talking about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Versus
yeah.
showing, so I guess, you know, some gameplay video for
I guess for them they just wanted to be like, this is an event that is happening. Okay, let's look at some games. That kind of thing. But yeah, that was my first time on TV. It was weird. And
it sounds like it.
I hope to do it again, but you know, whatever. And I also have another weird piece of news.
What's that?
I went to Chipotle over the weekend.
That's not very weird because you go to Chipotle all
the time.
Oh, that's
true. Yeah. Never mind. No, okay. So what happened at Chipotle was there was this woman there who in retrospect, I think she was a Time Lord because...
You mean like the Doctor Who Time Lord?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought he was the only one of his kind.
It turns out there's
there
a woman that works at Chipotle who is also a Time Lord.
Interesting.
She was making burritos that were bigger on the inside than they were on the outside.
What?
She was piling... Some guy walked in there and he's just like, yeah, I want this and this and this. And he just got everything, like the whole smorgasbord of contents. And it was a pile of stuff on this tortilla that was inches tall, like probably 6 inches tall, spilling over the edge of the tortilla.
And this woman is like, from a math topology standpoint, you should not be able to collapse that into a burrito.
There's no way to make this into a burrito.
Right.
And this woman was just like, wa-doop-a-doop, burrito. Somehow she got it in there. And then the person after this guy got even more shit on his burrito. And I was like, okay, this is clearly...
That has to be the limit now.
This is clearly the breaking point. Nope. She just rolled it right up like nothing. So I don't know what to make of this, but
so
I feel
she
like
makes
Doctor
TARDIS
Who
burritos,
fans should be,
I guess.
There are TARDIS burritos. Yeah. If you live in St. Louis, go to the Chipotle on the loop and
get yourself a TARDIS burrito.
Get as much stuff as you can possibly fit in that. You know what? Bring your own food. Just like start seeing, test the limits of this. Cause I don't know. I don't know if there are any. But yeah, so that was a real disorienting Chipotle trip.
Weird.
But yeah, so that's, I mean, if that tells you, that's about the most exciting thing that happened for me over the past week. So things are going real, real crazy.
Yeah, well, things on my front have not been going very interesting at all. So I think we should just jump right over into some game news.
Yeah, what happened in the world of games?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I learned all of this basically this morning before we started this podcast.
Well, news digest.
Little news digest for you, in case our podcast is your source of gaming news, which would be a terrible decision on the one hand, but a great decision on the other.
Now that'd be probably the best.
Probably the best way. So, I have a few things I want to mention. The first one, which I think is interesting from an indie game studio, which is that Rovio, the company that spawned Angry Birds and all of its franchises.
Rovio,
just fired 240 or something like that people, or is about to, which is about 40% of their entire workforce. And the reason is because I'm almost certain they're a publicly traded company. So last year's revenue, the amount of money they made, went up by 16%, but their profits actually fell by 70%.
Are they losing money?
I don't know if they're actually losing money. That was not said. But the thing is, you know, when you're a publicly traded company...
Actually, no. I guess their profits would have to drop more than 100% for them to be losing money, right?
Probably. I don't know exactly.
I think that's how profits work.
It's something like that.
It's not like I'm a financial analyst.
You probably should know. So Seth is literally a certified financial analyst, for those of you who don't know. So he should know the answer to this question. But in any event, when you are a publicly traded company... your goal is to make as much money as possible. So as long as you're not per quarter. So as long as you're not making as much money, really more money than is humanly possible, then you are doing a disservice to your shareholders and therefore are effectively not making any profit at all.
But here's what I think is really weird about this.
What?
Is, you know, when I was in business school, they would talk on and on about how the purpose of a corporation is to maximize wealth.
Right.
For the shareholders, right? But companies like will do this kind of shit all the time where they'll fire like half of their people because they're like, yeah, these people are costing us money, but they aren't
generating revenue.
We don't think they're adding as much to the bottom line as they could be. And even though we are very comfortably profitable, we aren't profitable enough because we aren't generating wealth for our shareholders.
Well, here's a question.
As much as we could.
Is it legally the case that the job of a corporation is to make as much money as possible for its shareholders?
They have what's referred to as a fiduciary duty.
Right. But is that to make as much money as possible or just to...
Well, so there's a board of directors
who
decides who runs the company, right? They decide who the CEO is going to be and stuff. And the shareholders are also involved in this decision. And so it's basically, I don't think there's a legal requirement, but it's basically if the CEO doesn't step in and be like, I'm going to fire all these people so that my shareholders can get more money because I don't want to pay my employees. I just want to give money to random people holding pieces of paper.
Right.
So if they don't do that, then they will be seen as sort of neglecting their duty to their shareholders and they'll be replaced.
But I mean... So I get that then the board has decided that that's the role of the corporation because they're also shareholders want to make as much money as possible, presumably. But yeah. It seems weird to me that that's what everybody is being taught, that a company's role is to do that instead of to generate some interesting product.
No, in business school, what you learn is that the reason that a company exists is to create wealth.
And this is why It's CEOs not about... are assholes, I guess.
This is why everything is fucked. There's no duty for you to, you know, innovate, create new things, whatever. The point of a company existing is to make wealth. How that wealth appears is completely irrelevant.
Right.
And even if people die on the way, you know, because you got to cut corners on safety regulations or whatever to improve your bottom line. You know, it doesn't matter. The point is you got to.
And that's why you pay your employees as little as you can get away with instead of as much as you can get away with.
Or just fire them entirely. Yeah. Well. But yeah, so it's not even about creating wealth for your employees, right? It's just about the people who own the company, which is the shareholders. So that's
lame.
A little lesson in business.
There you go. Well, and the consequence of this for Rovio is that so they're firing, you know, nearly half of their workforce, and apparently they're making a damn movie, an Angry Birds movie. And they've extended this franchise into a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, you've all, I'm sure, seen the
gummies,
the gummy things, and they have toys of various sorts and stuffed animals and that kind of stuff. And so apparently, this exploded last year. They just had tons of this stuff, and that's the reason they think that they lost so much profit was because all those things are a large expense, and they don't generate nearly as much revenue as a relative to expenses a game does.
Yeah, so it's pointless.
So it's pointless. And so now all of a sudden their profits went down because they're spending all this money on other stuff. And so they just fired half of their employees to basically cutting off all of these extra things that they were doing. So to me, this is really interesting because I've been looking at Rovio as well as Minecraft and other things where they've been extending, you know, their franchises out into the real physical world with toys and stuff. And thought, oh, that's really cool. That's some stuff we can look at doing as a goal.
Yeah.
But now here's the, you know, one of the wealthiest, most successful game dev companies around right now, at least on mobile. And really a relatively small company, actually, compared to a lot of them.
Sure.
And then they're doing exactly that. And they look, you know, from the world outside, they look like they're very successful because you're just seeing their stuff everywhere. And to be fair, they still are ungodly successful.
Yeah, it depends on what you define as success. Right. If your success is quarterly profit margin.
Yeah, but then the fact that over, because I think it was over the entirety of last year, that they could, their profits could go down by 70% because of their decisions about, you know, branching. Because I always thought that by investing in cool stuff like toys and things, it's a big upfront cost, and so you need to have enough, like your company has to be successful enough to do it in the first place. But once you can do it, then as long as you can get those things out there and people start buying them, then it's a good decision.
Well, the problem comes from you having to decide as a company whether you have a short-term vision or a long-term vision.
Right.
If you are going to invest in things that don't necessarily create a lot of profit or even tangible value, but that, like, if you get a stuffed animal of a bird from your game in the hands of, like, a million children, That's a lot of long-term value for you.
Yeah.
But you can't measure it.
Correct.
So if you're only basing your decisions on those, you know, those quarterly profit reports or annual earnings reports, you really lose out on having a more long-term vision for these kinds of things.
Yeah.
Because you need to meet those deadlines.
Well, and there's something cool. I mean, and I guess you're exactly right. The problem is that if your goal is profit above all else, then that's it.
And very specific short timelines.
Right. But if instead, because I would still love, and I think we're still planning to hopefully do it if everything goes really well, to take our stuff like our Crashlands characters and our Quadrupus, basically all of our heroes and villains, you know, and turn them...
Action figures.
Turn them into action figures, because it would cost us a lot to do it, and really the profit we would get back would be relatively small, or even nothing. But the fact that we could... Even if we just broke even on something like that,
it'd be great.
It'd be really cool, because then out in the world, you know, the stuff that we got to create would actually physically exist somewhere.
Yeah, people get to play with a Flux Dabes or, you know, Tack from Quadrupus Rampage as a physical action figure. That's awesome.
It is awesome. To me, that's worth even a profit loss as long as you're still doing fine.
Yeah, but we're, you know, we're a private company, so we get to make those decisions.
Right.
Nobody's gonna replace us or anything like that if we just do that.
That is a fact.
So we get to do whatever we want, and we'll never be publicly traded. So you can quote me on that.
Yeah, you can.
I hate that concept.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's a moving away from deep talk about business structures. There's one more piece of game news
I want to
talk about because it's really big and potentially very interesting to see the consequences, which is that YouTube has finally launched or is launching. I think the date was set for today, but currently it is not yet live. Their own live streaming and gaming thing called YouTube Gaming.
Like a Twitch competitor?
It's a Twitch competitor.
Okay.
So Twitch, for those of you who don't know, is currently the major place where live gaming events happen. And apparently, just very recently, they had their best day ever, where they had 2 million concurrent users live stuff, and it was actually almost entirely esports that were being watched.
Like
Rocket League and mostly League of Legends, actually. Rocket League is growing, but League of Legends is by far the biggest thing there.
Yeah, yeah.
So Twitch has been growing for quite a while. And so did Amazon buy them, or were they just talking about buying them? I can't remember what time.
I think
Amazon bought them. Google was interested in buying. This was like a year ago.
Last year there was a sudden flurry of big companies buying weird things that made no sense, like Facebook
buying Oculus
and Amazon buying Twitch. It was a really disorienting couple of
months. It was very weird. But apparently Google wanted to buy Twitch as well, but they were worried about antitrust issues. And so they didn't. So Amazon bought Twitch, and then in true Amazon fashion, just left it there and didn't do anything with it.
That's a good business.
Right. So in the background, then Google apparently has been making Google Gaming. And so Google Gaming is basically, it's kind of like, as I understand it, it's like a separate YouTube almost. If you plug in a search term or anything else, if you go to gaming.youtube or whatever, I don't know. But if you find GameTube, but if you go to it and do a search there for a game or something, it'll only show you things that it thinks, and it still will pull from the normal YouTube videos and stuff, but it'll only pull things that it is pretty confident as a search engine are actually related to that game.
Oh.
So it's really game specific, and they've added, which is now live, I checked it out, a real streaming feature to compete with Twitch that has live chat and all that kind of stuff that already exists. So I'm very intrigued by this because we've used Twitch a little bit in the past.
To
stream game dev. And not very much, mostly because it's a pain to get it going. And most people actually still don't even know that it really exists, which is interesting because it's the biggest place to go to for watching games being played live.
Yeah, yeah.
But most people don't really even know that that's a thing that people do.
Yeah.
So,
well, it is a weird thing. I mean, let's be real about it.
It is weird.
You could sit down and play a game, or you could watch somebody else play. To me, the playing is the fun part. But yeah, I don't know.
But it does depend. When it's a competitive game like Rocket League, I still prefer to play it. Absolutely.
It's cool to watch the masters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but watching really good people is fun. And for a few reasons. One is you get to see what the peak level of skill looks like, and you get to learn from it, obviously.
And learn how terrible you are by.
And learn how terrible you are. But there's the other group, which is more common with Let's Players, who on average don't do live stuff, at least right now. But perhaps that will change. But a lot of Let's Players, you know, what they're selling is basically their personality in combination with gameplay. So they're basically they're more selling a review of the game with an interesting personality layered on top.
Right.
Than the gameplay itself. And so from what I've seen on Twitch, for the most part, that still falls into the same group. So you have a huge, huge number of people Twitching.
Twitching,
that's what
yes.
you call it. I have no idea. A huge number of Twitchers playing, doing live gameplay, which is basically just them playing the game. And they're okay at it. And they have a very small number of people who watch them play. Which makes sense, because everybody else would rather watch either. So I mean, people want to see something that's entertaining or just go do something entertaining.
They just don't want to see Joe Schmo averagely playing League of Legends.
They can go averagely play. Exactly. And a lot of them, weirdly, are that.
I did try to look up some EVE Online Twitch streams, and that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It was just endlessly. It was like middle-aged guy after middle-aged guy sitting in the dark silently, like floating through the void of space.
Right.
This is the most depressing thing I've ever seen.
Oh, man.
Don't try to watch Eve streams. Just don't even.
It's hard to make Eve exciting to a observer, I think.
It's exciting over long term, like over 5 years.
Right.
Something exciting will happen eventually. Right.
But yeah, so if you're into that kind of stuff, you should definitely keep your eyeball on YouTube gaming. Apparently, they already have apps on iOS and Android out today or something that are just specific for that. It'll be really interesting to see how that goes. Apparently, esports right now are just getting so big that there's serious talk of them being in the Olympics and all kinds of craziness. So,
you mean the E-Olympics?
The E-Olympics. No, I mean like the real Olympics.
I feel like this. Anytime you put an E in front of something, it automatically relegates it to the 90s.
Yeah, like, well, it reveals you to be like 100 years old or something.
Yeah, you're like, well, is it a sport? It's an e-sport. Did you get your e-vite to the e stadium to watch the e-sport?
To the e-event?
Yeah. Because now we have email and we have snail mail. I'm wondering when it's going to hit a point where email is just mail and then snail mail is snail mail.
I think it's already kind of getting there, actually.
Yeah.
Because usually now when I say, I got to go check my mail, I mean my email.
But yeah, slapping an E, I think maybe esports need to rethink that term.
Yeah, because, just call it sports.
Yeah. Or just competitive gaming or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so otherwise, what else is up? We've been stomping bugs in Crashlands.
It has been a buggy nightmare.
But in a good, well, not actually not in a good way.
Not in a good way. buggy nightmares are terrible.
But we've been crushing them.
So oh yeah, no, we're doing good work. It's just the worst kind of work that has to be done, you know.
It's like doing open heart surgery on a tumbleweed.
Yeah,
that's the best way I can describe it.
Because
it's this weird only defined tangle of crap that's flipping around and traveling through at 40 miles per hour.
Yeah,
trying to.
And then
fix.
The end result is that you discover that the tumbleweed doesn't even have a heart.
Yeah, and you're like, oh shit, I was in the wrong tumbleweed.
Yep,
there's a whole pile of them over here,
and none of them have hearts. It turns out.
Oh man, it's just bad.
Yeah,
but yeah. So we've been jamming away, but our to-do lists are getting super tiny. There's not a whole lot of stuff left.
No.
But yeah, we haven't started the beta test selection process, but we are on the cusp.
We're getting close to it. It's still going to follow the plan that we set forth. It's just things are a little slowed down because Sam has been basically unable to work whilst getting a new blood system.
Yeah.
Which is understandable.
Yeah, we can't necessarily hold that again.
Nope. So. So the original goal was to have, was to be ready basically to start by, the next original goal. The original goal was to have already started. The next goal was to be starting on Friday this week. And that's seeming awfully unlikely. But we will.
We're not going to be too far off.
No, we won't be too far off. And we'll still try to get, so we have not yet sent out invites for beta tests, I think, as Seth already said. But we still plan to do that very soon. So keep your eyeballs on that.
Again, make sure that our emails aren't going to spam.
Yeah. So add robot. No, wait, what is that? No, thingamabob at bscotch.net to your address book.
I think it's robot at
bscotch. You should add both of those use both of those.
Just look in your spam. If something from a robot is in there or somebody named Thingamabob, get it out.
Get it back out. And you can still sign up if you haven't at, where's it at? At crashlands.net. There's a link for applying to be a beta tester. And yeah, I guess that's probably the bulk of the Crashlands news.
Yeah, well, let's hit some fan questions.
Some user submitted fantastic questions.
We have a whole bunch of questions today. I mean, we're gonna try to answer them a little bit more than last. I think we only got three questions.
Yeah, we didn't hit very many.
So we're just gonna slap them right in the mouth. All right, first question. So we have a couple Crashlands specific questions.
All from one person.
All from Nia. Or
Nia? I'm going to go with Nia.
Asks, will there be randomized events that shake up the map like in Terraria? There is a spread of Hallow / Corruption. So will there be other events other than the day or night cycle? No.
Nope.
No, we don't have that. So we have, basically the world changes as you move out from the center. And we also have a whole bunch of things that change the world through questing. So it's not randomized. It's actually stuff that's tied to the story,
yeah,
which we find to be preferable in this case.
Yeah, if you have randomized, because I mean the world is already randomized, like in Terraria. But then we do have that defined story on top, and so it's already a little bit tricky to combine a random map with a defined story. And if we were to further combine that with random events, it could get interesting.
You have a combinatorial explosion.
It could get a little complicated, but more importantly, that is actually something that we had thought about doing. But it sort of ended up, because we also wanted to have weather and some other kind of fun, even just cosmetic things in the game. But all those things got kind of relegated to the bottom of the feature list, you know, below all the stuff that really absolutely has to get done.
Yeah, we wanted to focus on story and trying to make it so that if something does happen in the world, like, so the world can change through quests and story events, right? So because of the fact that it's tied to the story, then it means something, and you know why it's happening, and it's not just a random, like, oh no, my base is now destroyed because corruption. There's reasons. So that's where that is. Nia also asks, will Crashlands have an upgrade or skill system like in Quadrupus Rampage where the player gets stronger and stronger? Yeah, I mean, that's basically the nuts and bolts of the crafting system. So instead of you like, oh, I earned orbs, I spend them on making myself stronger, you build equipment that makes you stronger.
Yeah, and then you get to choose, and you can swap your equipment and everything else. So it's really just based on crafting.
Yeah, and this is a fundamental concept of a lot of game development, is the idea of the power loop, where a lot of gameplay revolves around basically do a thing and then you get a reward which allows you to do that thing better so that you can do it again harder and get a better reward, right? It's a constant loop. So if you think about in a game like just a general RPG, like defeat enemies, level up, so you can fight harder enemies, level up again, you know.
Yeah, when you boil it down to that, it sounds awfully damn pointless, but that is that is what it boils down to.
Yeah, but you know, as human beings, we love the sense of ratcheting progression.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if it was like, oh, you leveled up, but you're still level one, but we're going to give you something. Oh, you killed a bunch of enemies, you filled up your XP bar, still level one.
Yeah.
No, like, you need that number to go up, even though nothing really changes.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need that. We love it. So
yeah. And actually, Seth has a talk on this called Loops and Rockets, if you go to our YouTube page.
It's on the YouTube.
You can find it.
Oh, yeah, it's on our About page.
Yeah, it's also linked to from there. But if you check out our YouTube playlists and stuff, you'll be able to find it, too.
Yeah. And the last question
by Nia.
About Crashlands, by Nia. Yeah, is in the Crashlands creator, can we choose what modifiers the weapons get?
Yeah, so for those of you who haven't seen this, there are two parts, actually, that you might not have seen, which is that the Crashlands creator lets you generate outposts and characters and boss fights and all that kind of stuff. It also lets you drop specific loot. So you can put chests out in the world with loot in them, or make it so that the bosses will drop loot. So, and then the weapons have a modifier system, like in a lot of
So it'll be like games. This weapon, when you hit stuff, it randomly strikes them with lightning, or sometimes you steal life, or you get a turbo speed boost.
Right. And those, I believe, those modifiers are attached to, they're sort of predefined, right?
For some things. Yeah. So basically we have two types of weapon. We have regular weapons, which can range in quality from sort of normal all the way up to epic. There's four different quality levels. They have randomized stuff on them. And if you put, say, like a sawgrass sword, which is one of those ordinary weapons, if you put one of those out in the world, you can make it be random in terms of its quality, or you can improve its quality. And the higher the quality, the more modifiers it gets. You can't choose the modifiers.
So modifiers are still random. Okay.
The modifiers are still random. But legendary items, we have a suite of legendaries which have predefined stats on them.
Right.
So, for example, we have these gloves called the Hydra Blade Wood Shankers. And they're these wooden gloves that have sawgrass blade claws on them. And those have a specific set of stats that help your attack power and stuff like that. So the legendary items you can hand out, and you'll know what it's going to be. But the other ones you can you won't get to decide. So it's mostly just a kind of a limitation of our system. But it, you know, it's not something we may add that later. I don't know. But yeah. at the moment that's not in there.
Not off the table, but currently yeah. not on it either.
Okay, so Crashlands. I think that's all of our Crashlands questions.
Yeah, pretty well. Covers it.
Yeah. And let's hit all right, so Cloudmere asks me, I got a question directly. He asks, what's the first game you ever made once you started using Game Maker?
I'm gonna take a guess as to what game it was.
Okay.
And it would be ridiculous if it was true, but it might be true. Am I not gonna get it?
You're not gonna get it, I don't think.
Okay. I was gonna guess What's the punching game? The rocket?
Sky Brawler was the second game.
Second game, okay.
The first game I made, well, I don't know if you can even call it a game, but I guess you could say that about anybody's first game. It was a game called Dragon Bearzilla, where it was...
Wait, I don't think I ever saw this.
I never showed it to anybody. Nobody's ever seen it. Because I didn't know how to do the art. I didn't know how to do anything. And so I was like, I just need to try to make a thing that's animated that I can move around on the screen and that does something. And so I was like, I'll make a little cityscape, like a little skyline of buildings. And I'll control this little flying bear dragon that's huge that will fly around, and I can shoot fire out of my mouth at the buildings and try to make them explode. So that was... My first game was Dragon.
It sounds like a good game. How did it turn out?
I mean, it was mostly just me trying to figure out how Game Maker worked. So it turned out terribly. But then once I figured out stuff, then I just completely scrapped it and then moved on to Sky Brawler. And there's a lot of literature out there about Sky Brawler because I worked on it for about a year.
In fact, if you go to stastudios.com, the blog we mentioned earlier for Seth's original game company.
Yeah, so Skybrawler I kickstarted it, and it was blown so far out of scope that after quite a while, once I learned more about game dev, I realized I couldn't actually do this project.
Nope.
And so I messaged all my Kickstarter backers and gave them their money back because I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
But the concept behind it, I still want to pursue. I still want to, because I love the idea of a platformer where you are a guy with rocket fists.
What's not to love about that?
That's right up my alley.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was supposed to be like, oh, there's like 100 levels. And if you watch the Kickstarter video, it's just fucking hilarious. Like just how rough it is. Because I had never
actually,
done
Actually, that's
art.
Probably still up, isn't done... it?
Oh, yeah. You can see it.
Those things are archived, yeah.
You can go back to this Kickstarter page for Skybrawler, and you can see the game that I made when I was 3 months old as a game developer. that's what you get. This was back in early 2011.
Do you still have the Game Maker project? Actually, they probably don't work at all anymore.
I have the Game Maker project. It's totally broken. Yeah. Everything is... Well, the other problem was, since it was my first thing I ever really programmed... They're just memory leaks everywhere. There's infinite loops pop up all the time. The game just it crashes. It's poorly optimized. It was way too big of a project for my first game, and I didn't know enough to make something of that size. And so nowadays, whenever I talk to somebody who's a new game dev, I reiterate as hard as I can to start small. Like, don't try to make a huge thing because you don't even know what you don't know yet.
Yeah. Make small things. Make a bunch of small things, knowing that each one will fail as a product, but not as a project.
Yeah, and it'll fail a little bit less hard than the last one.
Yeah, and then importantly, every time you make a new project, take on a new a new problem that you didn't get to solve the last time.
Exactly. I really didn't start to grow as a programmer, as a game developer, until I stepped away from that huge project. After a year... and started making smaller things. So I made a puzzle game called Project 87. I made Bacterium.
Yeah.
I entered Ludum Dare, and made a game called Goat Milk, which took 13th place out of 680 people or something like that. So that was a nice validation. But I learned a ton from all these.
Yeah,
all these
and things. Actually, if you go to games.bscotch.net, which is on our blog.
Oh, yeah, I think there's a link to
There are links to a whole bunch of this stuff. So if you just scroll, the top is all of our actual current games. But if you scroll down, it's all of our old mini games or one-off projects or whatever that we're not... Many of them you probably can't actually get to play, but you'll be able to see a YouTube video of it. And some of them you can even download and play, actually.
Yeah, and so of course, when you make this early stuff, when you put it out there, it's going to get completely flayed by everyone who plays it. Which brings us right into the next question.
Yeah, which is, so Atruson asks, or says, you should totally, actually this is more of a demand than a question.
He did, he just demanded.
Atruson says, you should totally do the user review stuff again, like one review per podcast? And I believe he's referring to the fact that if you, again, on our YouTube, there is exactly one Coffee with Butterscotch episode that existed before we started this podcast.
It was a video.
Which was a video. And it was what Sam and Seth made after the launch of Quadrupus Rampage. It's hilarious. You should go watch it if you haven't seen it. But part of what they do there is they do dramatic readings of user reviews of Quadrupus Rampage. So I'm pretty sure that's what he's referring to.
Yes, I think that is correct.
Yeah. So this has been in our question queue for a while. We kind of just haven't answered it for one key reason, which is that we have grown to loathe user reviews with the burning of a thousand suns. Me in particular, anyway. That they're called reviews is a joke to me.
It's more like random thoughts.
It's random
idiosyncratic thoughts.
It's random thoughts by people who don't know what they're talking about is what it is. And are hard to please and believe everything should be free. So if you look through, and this is particular to the store reviews. So if you look, actually, if you look at Steam reviews, those are much, much better. And there are probably some good reasons for that, but I don't want to.
I think it's a framing thing, yeah. You either recommend the game or you don't recommend it,
right?
And then you say why,
right? Instead of having a rating system, and it also posts, yeah, but it also posts your gameplay time for that game, so people can. Mm. So if you've only played for like 30 minutes and you have a review, then people won't really believe you. But if you've played for 1,000 hours, then you know.
Well, here's something I've noticed, just as a quick side note.
Huh.
I see a lot of reviews by people who will have like 1,000 hours in a game, and then they don't recommend it.
Yeah. Well, I can't tell. Some of those seem like it seems like jokes.
Well, a lot of the time, but I think it comes down to, if you spend that much time with anything, you start to see the flaws.
Yeah.
Like the problems with the game become like your whole world, you know? And you forget all of the awesome shit that got you up to that 1,000-hour right. gameplay mark.
Right.
And you're just annoyed by all the stuff that hasn't been fixed yet.
Yeah.
And so you're like, I played this for my entire life, all my waking hours, but I don't think other people should play it.
Yeah, that's true. There are a bunch of those. Yeah, it is particularly weird. but in general, for the other app stores, especially so on iTunes isn't as bad as Google Play, but they're both really bad. They'll just post a random thought, and it's typically, I mean, it's not constructive. It's not useful for anybody. Whether other players or the developers, it'll just be like a one-off weird bug report with a one-star review. Like, it doesn't work on my random 5-year-old device. Or I hate aspect X of this game, even though somebody else loves it, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah, the crazy thing is that, like, the game may have like 1,000 unique parts to it.
Yeah.
And then one of those parts, one out of the 1,000, will be something that somebody doesn't like, and they will give it a 1-star review.
Yeah.
Because they're like, yeah, I mean, okay, sure, the other 999 things are fine, but yeah, this one thing, I just
drove me nuts.
Just fuck it, 1-star.
Oh, and it's a lot of complaining about ads showing up. It's people complaining about things they can get rid of by being a good participant in the game dev cycle by actually buying the thing. But anyway, so that there's a whole bunch of reasons that we don't want to do user review stuff again, and probably won't, except maybe every once in a while. Maybe post Crashlands launch, we'll play that game a little bit for a short period of time.
Well, you found a couple reviews.
But I found an example just to demonstrate this. Which is, so I decided to answer this question today, and so I looked up the reviews for Flop Rocket on Google Play and just looked at the first page just to see what was there, intending to find, you know, the first like negative comment that I could find. It was very easy, of course. It was the comment number 3, I think, in the list. And it was this one with a 1-star review by Joshua Lucasi.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. He says, it's great and all, but I don't know how to... So I'm reading this verbatim, so it's a little hard to interpret. Okay. It's great and all, but the butt part is that this has terrible, I mean terrible controls. Fix this and add a joystick or something. Mm-hmm. So this is what Josh says.
Great point there, Josh.
I don't know what he means by add a joystick because it's a goddamn touch device, but...
I think he wants us to physically mail him a joystick.
Maybe that's what he wants. And so... And so I read that and I was amused. So I pulled that in to read. And then I remembered back when Flop Rocket actually sort of relaunched on iOS and stuff, Touch Arcade wrote up their review of it. And of course, real reviews on real review sites are always more useful anyway. But this one was by Carter Dotson. He had this quote because I remember him talking about how much he liked the control scheme. So he says, seriously, the more I play it, the more I think that the scheme is just genius. Any other game using a turn and thrust control system needs to look at what this game has done and implement it for themselves.
Okay.
And along,
so what do we do with this?
Yeah. So this is the thing, is this is what reviews look like for games.
We get pairwise, completely opposing viewpoints for every single aspect of the game.
Yep. And so players will ask us all the time, like, why didn't we do it this way or that way or whatever? And we'll have somebody else that will write in asking us to do it exactly the opposite. And that's the answer. The reason we don't do it that way and do it how we decide we want to is because we know there are a million ways to do things, and there are some ways are going to be better than others for sure. But for the most part, most of the decisions we make aren't really better or worse. They're just a different decision.
Yeah, well, the great thing about it, too, is there are infinite games out there. And so we're just going to do what we want, you know, whatever we think is going to be best for the game. That's what we're going to put in it. And if there's something you don't like about as a player, something you don't like about that decision we made,
you can go play another game.
There's lots of other games out there. You know, we're not going to feel bad if you decide to play something else. We want you to play it, you know, but oh well.
Yeah,
we can't please
That's
everyone.
That's exactly right. Well, and especially if you're going to come in and complain because you're seeing advertisements, then we don't want you to play it at all.
On a game you didn't pay for.
Well, because it is on a game you didn't pay for.
It's free.
Then we don't need to hear what you have to say.
Exactly. okay, so we're just about out of time. We'll hit one last quickie.
All right, do it.
From Mia Kitty, who's...
Wait, is that going to be a quickie? Whatever. Who even cares? So. Just read it. We'll answer it.
So she's Mia Kitty is our primo Australian fan.
That's true.
Australian fan number one. Mia Kitty asks, what's your most inspirational quote or saying that keeps you going when you're down or frustrated?
All right, Seth, tell me. Oh, shit.
You first.
So I saw this question in the queue, and I purposely didn't put it in the list to answer because I couldn't think of an inspirational or actually not even inspirational, a quote or saying period that I ever refer back to in my brain. Hmm. And I don't know why that is. I'm sure at some points in my life there have been those, but clearly none of them were ever important enough to like really stick.
Well, I think it speaks to the idea that people draw inspiration from lots of different things. You know, some people will see a really good quote or a good, you know, idea from, like, they'll get it tattooed on themselves because you're like, I need to have this right in my periphery all the time. I don't know. For me personally, I don't have a quote, but I have an idea.
What's that?
That I really latch on to. Whenever I'm kind of bumming out or feeling unmotivated or whatever, there's this idea that I have that I'm pretty sure is true, which is that your brain gets really good at whatever you make it do a lot of.
Yes.
And
that is a fact.
For me, that's just a really motivating idea because it makes me not want to make my brain do dumb things. I feel like, you know, my Sunday is better spent trying to learn electronics or reading a really good book or, you know, trying to code a new game prototype than, you know, browsing Reddit or vegging out and watching TV or a rapid series of fail videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, there are infinite things you can do with your time, and you just have to bear in mind that whatever you do the most of, you're going to get real good at that thing, and you're going to get vaguely worse at everything else. And so to me, that's just a really big motivator.
Yeah.
To try to be as good as I can be and improve myself.
That's kind of a hard motivator, though, because it takes the thing that's hard about being motivated and makes that your motivator, right? Which is the hard thing about being motivated is the fact that, unlike in video games where the game is built to, with the loops in mind, to take advantage of the fact that we want instant gratification for our actions and want to feel like we're improving when we do stuff. In real life, the gratification is always delayed unless you're making bad decisions.
Yeah, but you know, but I think it's just about your frame of mind.
It is. No, because I mean, it absolutely is. But it is the case that, you know, intellectually that doing the stuff that's good for you that takes a long time to develop, which is, you know, working
or physically,
things
like,
or
if you're trying to get in shape.
Exactly. You know, we're all very well aware that we should be doing those things and that the long-term consequences are great. But just knowing that is rarely sufficient to actually serve as a motivator. Like, on the motivator being the thing that you need on the moment-by-moment basis to get you to keep making the right decisions towards that progress.
Well, sure, but you just need to keep your eye on the ball.
That's your quote.
That's it, yeah. Because just thinking about it...
And give it 110%.
That's a sports reference.
Yes.
I've been trying to lift weights and gain weight and become stronger just arbitrarily for no really good reason, but because I need to be in the gym and I need to stay in good shape. And so I've set some fitness goals for myself, and it's done a really interesting thing with the way that I think about meals and food, which is, it used to be that it would be like, it'd be noon, and I'd be like, okay, it is lunchtime, therefore I'm going to eat some food. I was eating it because it was lunchtime, and that was the extent of it, right?
Yep.
So it didn't really matter what I was cramming into my gullet, because the whole point of it was that it was lunchtime. But
it's a Pavlovian feeding system.
Yeah, but once I set some fitness goals down, then I started doing a bunch of reading about nutrition and what I should be eating and what I shouldn't be eating. And there's a very simple concept at play, which is, if you have a fitness goal, then anything you put in your mouth is either going to help you achieve that goal or move you further away from it. Right?
True.
So if you just keep your eye on that goal, then eating suddenly is part of that process. It's no longer, it is lunchtime, therefore food. It's more like, oh, geez, I need to hit my target for the day of like 150 grams of protein or something. And then you're eating it with a purpose, because it's helping you do a thing.
Right.
So it's all about integrating your daily activities into the stepwise process of getting to your goals. So keep your eye on the ball.
Keep your eye on the ball.
That's my quote. Okay. Well, with that, this one ran a little bit long, but you know, it's... You guys get a little free, worst things have happened. You guys get a little free extra.
On top of the free first part.
Yeah, I guess it's all free.
It's all free.
Think about it. But yeah, thanks for listening, guys. And we'll see you next week. If you want to get some more questions into the mix, hit up podcast.bscotch.net.
And you can find us on iTunes and any other podcast-catching device in the universe.
Yep. A great app that I'm using on my Android is called Podcast Addict. You can subscribe to our podcast through that, and it'll pop up whenever a new one comes up, whenever a new episode.
I'm using a different one on my Android called Pocket Casts, which is not free, but as a developer, I've recently decided to try to pay for everything that I use.
This one's got ads in it, so it comes out. You know,
And you're not blocking them, so
exactly,
yeah.
So check those things out. Get in on the RSS feed, and also check out forums.bscotch.net if you want to join the discussion about everything Beast Gutch related, including this podcast. And we will see you next week.
Goodbye.
Peace.